isn't, it's applicable for OER. But
your conference is being recorded.
It's not always the answers that you would think. No. That woman wrote 200 pages, you know, summarized.
Well, half of the identity, right, and how they see themselves, right?
It's a huge chunk of it, yeah, and how they identify with other faculty.
Yeah.
And her work originated with medical practice, right?
It's the other way around, that she saw this and saw that evidence-based medicine had some lessons for us in how we think about evidence-based education, right? It's an implementation science problem.
Yeah.
Working drawing by colleagues who expected us to break up into small groups earlier in the morning and then report back in, but we've been meeting as one large group, thinking about breaking into smaller groups around specific deliverables. Is anybody on the phone?
This is Jeff. Good morning.
Hey, Jeff. It's Peter. How are you?
Good.
Good morning. It's Yvonne.
Hi, Yvonne. We have, if you look at the deliverables list, being we have been productive in listing deliverables identified in yesterday's conversation, defining them further today, and selecting like the first one that we might wish to break out around, defining even further on behalf of the group. It's the Google Doc that Yvonne sent around yesterday, and if you get a chance to look at it, if there's anything that you see on here that you guys both that you think particularly attractive, important, could be productive for our work, please weigh in now. I think we'll have a chance to keep going with some of this stuff during the day and afterwards, but we're already a month later than we were yesterday. So just mindful of the fact that time moves quickly. While that thinking is audible, should we keep looking at this before we do select our final first 5 or 7 or 8?
It ends there, right?
It ends soon.
Transparency, is that the last?
Keep going. And then there's an older list.
Oh, well,
the best practice is the transparency. That's all the notes from, all the extractions
okay.
of the notes from yesterday.
I'll just make a pitch that I will be thinking about the future of open courseware. And
yes.
I'd love to have help with that.
Yeah.
Is there?
But I will be working on it.
I think like maybe each of the convening groups, whether it's MIT or Maryland or Hewlett involved in it, should have like a super vote around one topic that is essential that we absolutely need to cover. And if it coincides with our group of democratically voted, selected thing. If this is a democracy, I think it is.
Yes.
It's not everybody.
And for example, I'm happy to try to help Kirk.
Yeah.
Because the things that I'm most concerned about, I believe, are essential to the future that Kirk is also noodling on. And so I could see how that would fit there.
And I think if there were a case study of the future of OCW or something like that, I too would be interested, and just it would help me in the work for the group to be able to liberate time with MIT, knowing that one of the things we're noodling on is what to do with, in fact, the largest effort ever, or one of them. So it would be institutionally, just to be candid about, like, very productive to make an OCW related deliverable, somehow deliver. culture.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just two, three, four, you know, mm-hmm. small group. But I think that the future of OCW has a lot to say about the future of the field.
Sure.
The whole, just as the past of OCW did. More open tools and platforms. That's hard to argue against, I guess.
Yeah, everything on the list is a need to do. That's what I would have trouble voting because I wouldn't want to convey the idea that anything on there isn't important because everything on there is important to somebody here, and everything is part of this larger mix that's essential to our future. So maybe I'll just abstain and try to be helpful any way I can.
Just to reiterate that the intention with the voting is to just say these are the things we're going to work on first.
Where to start?
And it's in part really a practical thing. We can only have our minds on so many things at one time.
Mm-hmm.
How did you want to do it? You want like everybody gets three votes and puts plus ones on things, or
this is a really long list.
That's why you have dolls.
Can I put you on the spot? Can you maybe in 2 minutes kind of explain to me and the rest of my colleagues in the room what the struggles have been in trying to like develop metadata standards for open?
Well, I don't know that I'm the expert on the topic. I could take a swing at it and ask others to jump in. The most recent effort I was part of was with the Learning Resource Metadata Initiative. And the only reason CC got involved, so let me back up a step. The big search engines launched a project called schema.org, which is online. You can pull it up. And the idea of schema.org was to improve the search experience on Google, Bing, Yahoo, Baidu, and other engines. And the way they wanted to improve the search experience was by having different industries come up with very simple metadata standards that then that industry would mark up their content with, and then if the metadata was on that content on those web pages in particular, that if you went to Google or Bing or Yahoo or others, that you would be able to filter your search results by the metadata. So, for example, they went to the recipe industry and said to all the big recipe websites, you all come up with whatever metadata makes sense for you, so whether or not you're lactose intolerant, whether, calories per serving, if it's got chocolate in it, whatever. And you decide what that metadata is. And then when somebody types in German chocolate cake, that was actually the demo that they used at Google. You type in German chocolate cake, then not only do I get all the traditional Google search results, but I get this list of metadata as a menu on the side, and I can very quickly say, oh, no, I'm lactose intolerant, and then the search results would change in real time and only give me recipes that had no lactose in them, right, or dairy products. So they did this with the news industry, with recipes, and they came to education. And so they, schema.org, which was mainly run by Google, came to Creative Commons and said, we want you to represent the open side of education. And they went to the American Association of Publishers and said, we want you to represent the commercial side. And you two need to work together. And so we did, and we came up with the Learning Resource Metadata Initiative. My hope was that because part of LRMI was licensed, that was one of the fields, that if people put license in, then you could use Google essentially to be a front door to the commons. We even got money from Gates and Hewlett to pay repositories to mark up all of their existing content with LRMI metadata and to modify their user interfaces for uploads so that LRMI metadata would be fields that people could upload or fill in when they were uploading new content. So the OER repositories took that money, did the work, and in the end, schema.org just fell flat. They didn't implement what they promised they would. And so for anybody, not for the news, not for recipes, not for education. And so CC became a steward of LRMI. We didn't think we were the right steward for that, and so we passed it to Dublin Core. And now Dublin Core is the steward of the Learning Resource Metadata Initiative. It's online. You can see it. Just type in LRMI. it's not really used because the whole purpose of it was the engines were going to pick it up and do something with it. Last thing I'll say is that LRMI is really nothing more than a shortened remix of existing education metadata standards. So it's a remix of LOM and Dublin Core for the most part. But what schema.org said they wanted from all the industries was like no more than 15 fields. And if anybody's looked at LOM or Dublin Core, they're really long. So we crunched it to the bare minimum. Obvious stuff. Author, publication date, license.
Regardless of the outcome of the LRMI spec specifically, I think that not all metadata sort of projects are necessarily destined for like doing, right? And there are some examples. So like the team that did work on LRMI are sort of the skeletal, were the sort of skeletal first team that took a stab at the CPDL, right? The credential transparency like language, and so you know. A lot of the, like Stuart from the Dublin Core team and Jeannie Kitchens, who had IOER, which is like the biggest implementation of LRMI in open education, right? They were the core team that worked with the Lumina Foundation when they first kicked off the credential registry project, right? And so that was fraught for all of the reasons that you would think, right? Because cataloging and describing every credential because is just, you know, I don't know how to put it up, but they created a language, right? So CPDL is an open standard for describing credentials of various kinds, narrow and specific to the type of credential they need to capture. But the thing that was sort of a plus on top of the actual, only just the schema project, is creating interesting applications and partnerships for use cases. And so creating sort of not just the language, but like reference implementations. And now they have their entire project with like 10 pilot categories and their network, you know, with all of the partners. I think they have something like 200 partners that are committing to test and use and sort of add to it. So I think that like the where I think these projects die is people don't understand the purpose of a schema, right? Because it's so meaty. You're like arguing literally, and you told me this yesterday, you are literally arguing about is this the right way to describe this thing? And like people get like really like, you know, dug in, right? And this is what they want to do. But then like without the sort of use case and the implementation, you lose sight of why is this important. And if you can point people towards like, hey, this is allowing us to have a universal translator between like, you know, like workforce skills and like what you learn in a classroom. And like this is what an economic outcome of that could be, and here's some partnerships to like make that a reality. Then people are like, okay, so it's important for us to speak the same language, right? So it's sort of like you have to do all of those things at the same time, even though they're all like giant projects.
I mean, and to be clear, libraries understand the importance of that, and the sort of weird flip side of that is that right now in libraries all across the country, they're grappling with, you know, how do I describe these items and put them in whatever catalog my campus community is using in a way that they can find, and are coming up with ways of describing things. And now the conversation is whose way is right? and trying to come up with standards is often a negotiation about, you know, am I going to retrofit my stuff to your stuff or vice versa? And this has come up in a number of different contexts recently, and I think this is an important area of the conversation, both on the infrastructure side and on the communication side.
It's not just the things that we've traditionally tagged anymore. I think as we get into like more sort of adaptive learning, like, or even if we do the things that we want to do, which is like demonstrate that certain types of teaching lead to better student outcomes, then we have to have a better way of describing how students learn. And what is the language that we will use to describe mastery at different levels and progression? And I think, I mean, I don't know, that's like sort of your thing, right?
But Amy said yesterday, we can let the perfect be the enemy of the good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, there are some small steps, I think, that can be taken that may not be nearly as across that, you know, if we could just get everybody together to agree that, you know, if track these couple of things, it would help influence faculty adoptions of OER because we could begin tracking, you know, their contributions and the impact they're having nationally.
Well, I can say it the other way. Like, that same thing that is, someone should just do it and be like, hey, by the way, this is how we're tracking the progress and giving faculty credit for.
There are, and I know enough to be dangerous in this space, but having sat on the IMS Global and chaired a couple of committees there around the badging work, you know, there are organizations that do this. I don't know that much about IMS, and I suspect there's some issues there, too, with commercialization and that kind of thing. But, you know, there are organizations that are kind of expert at doing exactly the things you just talked about, getting those case studies together, helping keep everybody on track. Why are we here? What's the purpose of this? How do we make it work? So, you know, they may be worth having some conversations with, and I'm not advocating just for them. I don't know what others exist.
Another example of collective actions needed around standards.
Yeah.
So there's a sense that there might be some real value in revisiting this metadata situation, dust it off.
So Peter left.
He'll be back in a few minutes.
The question he asked before we restarted the metadata thing, which I'm really interested in. You know, I guess I'm just finding myself feeling like I'm still not sure what this group's bigger purpose is, and that if we were to begin with that statement of principles and purpose, that might help guide a lot of the rest of it. That, you know, let's just bite off that piece of it. What we did, again, with the doers group, that's exactly what we did. We bit off that piece of it, and then once we had that in place, we were able to convene face-to-face and begin identifying some projects that we wanted to tackle within that larger context of the statement of what we're going to call it, principles, whatever the heck it's going
to be. That makes good sense to me.
Yeah, so we need our declaration
with metadata. I mean, the field needs that, right? But is that what this group should be doing?
Hey folks, sorry, this is Yvonne on the phone. Could we just take a second and before everybody speaks, could you just identify yourself just by first name? That just helps us distinguish who's speaking. That would be really helpful.
Said Richard.
Richard says yes for everyone.
So this is Kurt. What we have, you know, the starting point for that, MJ and everyone, is a very short statement that's I think Ben circulated in some of the initial emails and invites and is on the top of the homepage on the wiki. So, MJ, I think what you're suggesting is to unpack and expand that, flesh that out a little bit more.
Yes, thank you, Kurt.
So that could be a thing that we jump in on. So we have basically an hour and a half left today. We could take maybe 30 minutes and collectively kind of walk through that process and then return back to the deliverables list and do that sort of voting to take ourselves out. Okay, here's the four, five, six things that we collectively.
My only hesitation is that I'm happy to be proved wrong. That I've rarely been part of a group that composed anything that was lucid, and typically, including with the Declaration of Independence, at one point, my recollection is they sent Thomas into a room with a quill and a piece of parchment, and you know, he came back with a document.
In fact, I think the Doer statement got first drafted by the woman sitting to my right.
So. What we can do with you know, a conversation right now is to get out on the table what concerns people have, their suggestions for what kinds of things might roll into it, not to have to actually copy edit.
And I'm sorry, that was Hal.
So I guess what I'm hearing, this is Sharon, is that what we're going to do is spend 30 minutes coming up with our sort of big goal statements. Is that right? Like, what are we doing? Like, what is the specific outcome of, like,
so this is a
30 minutes?
revisiting the charter for the group and the big objectives for what it is we collectively are trying to accomplish.
And is that the starting place?
What is the charter?
Let me find it. Apologies, seeing all my email.
I could actually just copy paste it into the Google Doc that we've been working off of.
And read it out loud.
Yeah.
Richard said.
Uh-huh. I got it. Monica got it. So that doesn't, I mean, so you're talking about this statement here, comprised of thought leaders?
Yeah. So the Open 2020 Working Group, comprised of thought leaders and educational innovators and funders, plans to work over the next year to envision a set of new, ambitious, practical recommendations for the future of open learning. As the teaching and learning landscape continues to evolve, we will identify opportunities for open learning resources and new open technologies to further support and enhance an accessible knowledge ecosystem. We aim to, specifically four bullets, assess the landscape of emerging trends in education and industry, suggest innovative and practical approaches to enhance open learning and access, help shape the forward-looking vision for open learning in evolving educational and technological landscapes, and last, create a public set of think pieces and recommendations for the future of open.
Okay, so can I propose something? It seems like our exercise is in the third bullet right now, which is the forward-looking vision. And I wonder if what we could do is for the next, I think, 25 minutes now, like, I'll just think about what we would consider our top four things that would be in education goal, and then what we could do is like we can all just like see if there's overlap in what we all consider the top four things that should be part of this broader vision for the future of learning generally and the role that open plays in that.
Should we do that individually or should we get together in small groups?
I favor a mix of that, so maybe like we could split it like 10 minutes. Like individually coming up with a ranked list, and maybe four is just an arbitrary number that I picked. I think 17 sustainable goals is like actually it's quite too many, and the also too many, and you know, but like maybe four to six top items, and then see if there is significant overlap in the items that we individually picked.
I would see it maybe some individual thing,
yeah.
And then small groups, and then we can sort of. Still
us,
and so then we don't have, yeah.
I'll take a pair share. Yeah. So I can set a timer for 10 minutes, if that's helpful.
That's such a good thing to do with this group.
Thank you. I think that's a great suggestion, Chair. Accessibility and inclusiveness, yeah, let's say, and equity there. Equity.
Oh.
understand that to be the same, but not in one double.
Hello?
Hey.
We're working. We're taking a quiz. We're taking an open assessment.
Hi, Johan, is that you?
Yes, this is me. Hello.
Oh, great. I'm so glad you were able to get on. It's Yvonne. They've shifted the agenda just a little bit, and we've asked them to identify themselves before they speak. So you might hear a little bit of radio silence in the next 10 minutes or so.
That's fine.
Thanks. Check out the Google Doc because they're working on that. Okay.
Yeah, sorry to barge in like this at the last moment.
Yeah. dinner with them with you on that.
Thank you. cried openly. Openly cried.
So you're trying to mess up this one.
Yeah, right. I want to ruin your image. Let's get out of here.
We love you, Mark. Don't listen to the rest. We all threw away our marks.
That's right.
Not just educators, right? It's also public knowledge.
What has to happen? Enable sustained financial support for open education resources and tools through public education financing policies. Because all of these things require resources, and they're all, and until, you know,
everything is falling into the category.
Is there something in that
there?
Well, but
it's
not
killing
us.
Great.
There's
often, right?
Well,
if we're going to come up with what's come together, it's pretty strong.
This has been
settled. And the world's governments have said, yes, those are our gold masters. So we can ride those coattails or we can try to raise them. I prefer to ride the coattails of the United Nations. And then
we have ideas for things that,
which are good coins. I mean, it's the UN that
has a budget. So that
education
can be.
That's not a good place to start. I don't know what.
Financial support for open education resources.
Targeted syndicators, like it. Our job could be to ride on SDG4 and say, here's how open is a means to do this. In some of it, right? Not all.
The rest of the things on my list.
Other documents coming out in November will be the final draft of the.
It's in competition with everybody else around the table.
That is a list where there was consensus of all you just come
across. That strikes me that to achieve all of these wonderful things while they're on the list.
A list that the governments of the world have said these are the things that we need to work on for education. Again, no reason for us to recreate that. Like that list is what the governments will have in front of them in their Department of Education and Ministry of Education. And it doesn't matter what list we bring, that's the list they're going to use. So we have to think and holding SDG up because the UNESCO is the UN. What does it look like to go from
novice to expert on open content.
So I started in the 70s.
And the idea was 15 steps in each, they're incremental steps. And each one of the steps is
that I don't have the rights to.
Yeah.
And then I just published everything with the CC guidelines on my website.
Yeah, they're measurable. And they're specific.
Responsible production and consumption includes things like cultural. Infrastructure. You can keep it right here. Can you speak really fast?
I'm doing my best.
Next.
Able, who very, very well articulated the connect, or helped us identify the connection between what we were trying to achieve and the existing SDG number 4, which we looked at, and we observed, Will observed that while the sub points of SDG 4 mostly apply to primary education, they're easily translatable to higher ed as well. So we would like to propose, Channel and Cable, that we scaffold open onto the existing 4. The work has been done. The world has agreed, essentially, that this is, that these are the goals. And it's up to us to make that translation for our community. Cable, yeah.
So we talked about that, and we also talked about how in November UNESCO is going to vote a yes on the UNESCO OER recommendation, which will also be something, it was voted, it got a yes consensus vote in May, and it'll be a consensus rubber stamp in November, and then starting in 2020, the governments of the world will have a list of recommendations that are pretty specific. And so we were talking about, for us to try to rewrite what SDG 4 has already laid down, or try to rewrite what the recommendation already has in it, seems not wise. And it might be wiser for us as a group to use those two documents as the framework and let those be the high goals, and that what our task could be as a group is to show the stacked progress and the incremental progress of how you get to those goals or how those recommendations are accomplished, and specifically why open or how open helps you get to those. What is it about open that lets you move up that stack to those, to accomplish those?
Connecting that back to MJ's notes then, I mean, this is being really explicit that open is not the goal in and of itself, that the goal is better and broader education, and that what we're arguing for first is that open is the best path towards that, and then really illustrating what are the steps that get us there.
Can I ask a good question? You led off with something that I thought was interesting, which was, even though the SDG 4 is designed for primary and secondary, and I'm curious, like, if you think that this conversation needs to be open work in case.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to clarify. I didn't mean that that it should be limited, the discussion should be limited, or our vision should be limited to higher education. It's just, it so happens that most of us here, I think not all of us, work in the higher ed space. So I at least wouldn't feel comfortable making declarations about the K-12 space because I'm not knowledgeable enough.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, thanks.
I have a clarifying question too. So the idea of meeting with these SDGs and then thinking about like what is the role of open in each, is that like parallel to sort of what we were surfacing yesterday and a little bit today around like this idea of no poverty? Like, who are the advocates around supporting students and making sure that they don't go hungry, and how does our work help serve the, or how do we understand the connections between open education?
You didn't articulate that in our group, but I think you're absolutely right.
In terms of like letting these bigger goals sort of lead and then looking for connections,
coalition building.
Has
one?
You actually wrote it down, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, Hal and I discussed our individual points, and what surfaced was that there is an overarching point that, for the people on the phone, this is Brianna from Authors Lions, that the overarching point is that we need to embed sustained financial support for open educational resources, tools, and practices in public education financing policy, and that is a sort of foundational goal before we can get to the other items on our list.
Yeah.
landscape exercise and understanding what the current data policies are of major university systems or players, how those relate to the kinds of contracts that are already being signed or contemplated. Tough ask in some respects because those contracts are all under non-disclosure agreements. But perhaps, I know this has been one of the problems. This is one of the obstacles in understanding the shape of the big deals in OA. Probably also going to be an obstacle to understanding what kinds of provisions publishers and schools are making around the data that comes out of these kinds of learning tools. Beginning with that, moving toward a set of principles that could be articulated and potentially adopted widely as the open analytics data policy or open learning data policy. I think that would be an interesting starting point, pretty achievable by a group of this kind.
So a lot of, I did put a link in the doc to the Solimar data higher ed, Solimar Convention for Learning Research in Higher Ed. We met twice over a period of 2 years, and there's a lot that's been documented there, at least with respect to treatment of these data and kind of our assertion that they belong to us and that we need to get them back. So I think this would be a great starting point for that work.
There's some other bits and pieces, and I don't know how they all connect, but there's a group called Bright Hive that is working on data trust models for higher education. I don't know what the best example is, but there are, I think, larger governance questions around data that universities can either engage forever, and that would be, it seems like a tractable problem and a good problem for this group to be involved in defining and articulating principles around.
We discussed off-topic things. Sorry, I didn't even.
You know what? I'm going to have to take those crab cakes back.
Can we back up to Joe for a second? I think your work is so important, and it's such a foundation for so much other progress that can flow forth. But in your description of it, I just worry that it got a little too convoluted or complex. Is there a way to boil down to one or two sentences that would fit in a document like that that would support the next steps that you think are important in strengthening your efforts? Is there a bullet point?
Well, I'm trying to differentiate this from the OSP work. I mean, OSP has connections to this, of course, and gets into some of the same territory, but looking for general data policy principles for higher education moving forward as companies begin more explicitly data mine the activities
they're
teaching.
So developing general data organization principles that support progress in open education. I'm just trying to boil it down to when I go to talk to the next person or funder about you, and they say, what's the elevator pitch? What's the two sentences that encapsulate the utility of the work you're doing? What would be that sentence?
Well, I'll be happy to give you the open syllabus pitch, but I'm not sure that's what we should carry forward with this group.
Is there an umbrella that this group could endorse that would provide support for the important work you're trying to accomplish?
I think it's figuring out the governance principles for data in teaching and learning.
Figuring out the governance principles.
Articulating governance principles for.
Okay, that gets me. I don't know if that helps anybody else, but that gets me.
Important.
I just don't want to see it lost.
If someone wanted, should we figure it out or should we set the standards and guidelines?
I don't know that we can set them, but we can establish a process that sets the guidelines.
There's a lot of activity out there that we probably just don't know about. I mean, Mark has alluded to data policies in the SUNY system that have been too aggressive for some publishers. It'd be interesting to figure out what those are and where the pain points are for both schools and publishers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are lots of other experiments
maybe
out there.
Landscape?
Yeah, I think it's
landscape assessment of data tools for the management.
And maybe after that assessment,
when you, you know, when you define it with that specificity, then a whole other constellation of opportunities comes into view. I mean, I think, oh, well, that's a project maybe for ISCME, you know, Institute for the Study of Knowledge Management and Education, or others, that becomes a imagine that being a book like the gap analysis, you know.
That very topic.
Right.
It would be good to approach them also with maybe a set of principles that they are maybe trying to adopt as well.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to sort of clarify what might turn your intervention into a practical deliverable. Because, again, I just think your work is important to not be further developed and built on. It's a foundational piece of work.
Mark, do you have anything you want to?
Well, I mean, I'm just going to follow up with this. I joined this group over here. I think a lot of our institutions are walking into agreements with publishers and vendors and others right now along the lines of data, where you're sharing information and you're sharing data, or you're allowing a provider to come in and absorb your data and do with it what they wish. To get to an aspiration or a goal here, I would love to see us, you know, coalesce around an idea of what we would like to, what we envision the future of data sharing inside of education. The transparency between non-for-profits and for-profits. It still boggles my mind that non-for-profit higher education institutions sign NDAs. I have no idea why we sign NDAs, you know.
It's nutty. Absolutely.
It's nutty.
Yeah. Yeah.
So common.
I mean, we talked about a number of ideas. I think our conversation sounds like it may be parallel to this group a little bit. And we try to unpack and see if there's, like, what would it look like if we took up the education one and talked about it. The only idea, I mean, one idea that I would add that I don't know if I've heard explicit yet is around, like, how can we have a clear statement around how our work connects with and supports students. I think we've talked kind of abstractly about data, what is our vision for how we're supporting? What resources and supports that we are trying to envision that they need, and how can we get clear about that? I'd say similarly for educators, so how are we thinking? That was only a piece of what we talked about.
Yeah, but it's a really important one, and I think, good to bring it out specifically.
Yeah, we talked about that too.
Yeah.
That was our thought was, we can't do any of that without money. Those are the goals, you know, to make it possible for any student to rise academically for him anywhere, and to make it possible for any instructor to continuously improve their effectiveness as an educator. But then, you know, we had those on our list, and then it's like, well, how are we going to do that with no money? So then we ended up focusing on the money.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it has to all be money. That's coming from the woman that's always griping about New York got $8 million and I got $100,000. But, you know, I had to get that in before we left. But, you know, I think there's an awful lot we can do around reorganizing internally to make some of this vision reality. People just don't understand yet the value proposition.
I know that when I was chairman of the board of a $1 billion college system, anytime I could bring new money to the table, I could create new behavior.
Yeah.
Anytime I tried to reallocate money, it was who took my cheese.
Right. Yeah, I know.
I guess one other thing I'd add is, as we prepared this initial kind of mission statement for the group, what I had in mind for fake peace type deliverables was much more content rich, you know, and the pivot we've taken towards the SDGs and this, like, really well-crafted, intentional messaging
as I think really important and worth acknowledging that what we're creating is not just, you know, more white papers and more in-depth studies, but
it's not connected to the larger good and big thorny problems we're trying to tackle.
I think when OpenCourseWare first started and when OER first started, we had a sense of what stakes were and what the sort of forces were that were aligned against the open, burgeoning open movement. But that sense was like, you know, you can see like the flash of the eyes of a wolf and like the reflection of it somewhere deep in the forest. And it was like, it was sort of vague. It was real, but it was still like there's encroaching monopoly power over information, media, communication that affected education and therefore that affected equality and justice and freedom and stuff. But I think that today the stakes that we face are much clearer, in part because we didn't do enough, maybe, or the world didn't do enough, or we didn't recognize the challenges, all of them, for what they are. The world that we live in today is much more, I think, dangerous and violent and awful because of some of the trends that we sensed at the beginning of the open education movement, but couldn't recognize how best to counter, to regulate, to change. And so for me, what matters is like defining the public knowledge requirement, because it is an acronym, but it also recognizes sort of publicly that the world that we can't ignore the outside world. I can't go to a university meeting that doesn't mention the crisis that we're in over information in the same way, perhaps, that you have trouble sitting through university meetings that don't mention the climate emergency that we're in. But to me, that crisis over information and truth and facts and validity and verifiability and credentials and all of that is tied up as part of the structure that we have to tilt against whether or not we can succeed or not. And to me, like as educators or as knowledge institutions, we have to somehow figure out a way to point whatever pitchforks, torches, arrows, rocks we have toward that. And I realize that's, you know, touching on the list of grievances that we're supposed to avoid, perhaps, but there really is a problem in the ecosystem out there, and I think the OER movement, and I think open access, and I think free culture, and all of the work that we do is part of dealing with it. And we have to embolden ourselves and recognize that challenge is mortal. It's mortal now. Look who's in charge. Look who the most powerful person in the world is, in part because, as Hal was explaining, or as we've talked about, I'm sure, like, he's arisen through media networks and falsehoods and stuff and holds on to power through that system, which is exactly the antithesis of the system that we, sort of, many of us, I think, hope to build.
Can I sort of take that and maybe pivot a little bit? So I am getting all sorts of weird, like, imagery in my mind about pitchforks and wolves when you're talking, and I don't want to. Well, I know, but I think that I take your point, but view it from a little bit of a different perspective, right? Because this effect, in effect, is my job, right? And I think that we don't have, I don't think we have like wolves necessarily, but I think that our social and education as a subset of our social problems are very well documented in gap when you're in kindergarten matters because it's highly correlated with, you know, your likelihood to enter post-secondary education, or, you know, that the zip code where you were born highly correlates with, you know, your success, you know, over a lifetime of earning. Austin just put out a paper last week about, you know, there is a lot of data, and we know that these individual problems like word gap or, you know, like reading level or digital literacy individually correlate with some of the sort of broader problem outcomes. I think that there's a broader narrative here, and so I guess to answer maybe to earn my cupcake, you know, some of the things that I'm required to say because it is my job is that, you know, my, like, goal, our goal as a department is, you know, if on our wall is individuals have, like, all individuals have an opportunity to learn, and we really believe that education is an engine for economic opportunity, right? We don't see these perfectly in the world. It's very imperfect, and I think that my trying to take this away from, like, pitchforks in the night is not because I don't think that there are real perils here. I think that all these stack into the larger narrative of these very systemic problems that we have in society and not just in the education sector, right? But it is sort of at the core. And so I would love for us to take a constructivist approach to this where we say we have data. Like, so if our goal is to allow all individuals to freely learn or for all of this knowledge to build into economic opportunities, like, what are the sub-problems? Like, is it word gap? Can there be an open education solution to the word gap problem? Or is there, you know, so, I mean, I don't know what it is, right? But I just feel like all of these are big challenges, and I would love for this group not to get weighed down and, like shake people with torches. I just think that we have so much, there's so much, like, brain power and opportunity around this table to just like, you know, maybe that's the landscape analysis. What is the data showing us about the state of higher education and workforce, or the state of education and workforce at large? And are there very actionable pieces as a result of that landscape study where we can say, like, look, are there open source tools that we can challenge the community to build to teach kids words, right? Or are there tools that allow us to teach people digital literacy skills, something like that?
Yeah, this gets back to my earlier point about the IES work we were doing, right? So if right now you were researching the word gap issue, and for those that may not be familiar, you know, kids, ESL kids that are behind in, it's all been quantified, and
yeah,
that number of words ultimately fall further and further behind, with 5.4 or something,
yeah,
like that. They're already really at risk of failure. If I were researching that and went out and looked for what is ed tech doing around this question, you're not going to find it.
Yeah.
I have to know to look at OER, you know, X, Y, and Z technology and search for it that way. We need to tie the OER work back to the bigger issues, and I love your suggestion about doing that landscape analysis. We tried to do that for the research handbook that I just finished editing for our profession, and instead of it all being organized around the technologies, and we used to have a chapter on OER that David wrote every year or every 5 years when out. I said, David, this time I need you to turn it on its ear. I don't want you to write an open chapter. I want you to write a chapter based on the problems that open is trying to solve. And that became a very different exercise. It was really hard for our folks to do, but I think that's exactly what the open community needs to do as well.
Yeah.
Picking up on, go ahead.
Just in, not in support of pitchfork, but in support of the proactive, the positive, constructive side of that. You know, I think we're talking about different approaches that appeal to different audiences here, too. And with Norman's colleague at Carnegie Mellon, when she did that, the paper, the anthropology approach to, you know, to how faculty engage or don't engage in implementation, it really wasn't about you can convince them with the data. Just show faculty the data. And if we were better at showing them the data, then we can make change happen. And that was not, in fact, that was not at all the situation, is that they have this sense of identity. And I think what Peter was alluding to a little bit was, I think we do have a negative narrative mm-hmm. in higher ed about any more who do it, does all of it, all of higher ed, is it all of them responsible for creating knowledge? I would say no, it's just the research institutions, and it's small number of research institutions, and what are the rest of higher ed doing in that domain? Is that, do they have responsibility for knowledge creation? And I think that is something that Open should put back on the table, that everybody is, right? Everybody is. It's not just the research institutions getting the big grants who are doing science-based research. It's what Open can provide.
And what knowledge creation is, you know, you could broaden that out a little bit. Transparent instruction or in your field, whether, you know, you're not doing frontline research, but you are sharing practices, you are sharing activities that lead to good results, is, I think, could fit into
creating and learning fits right in there, too, right?
Do you remember when we, when I first started in OER, I had to prepare my arguments for faculty of pushing back because of academic freedom. I think that was a challenge, you know, that had to face the perspective that faculty had and were resistant to adoption of OER. And it was really remarkable how that argument just turned around really quickly. I mean, now I think it's an argument you use for OER, right? Like,
yeah,
like,
right,
you're really
right.
Excited to get that question because
the ultimate.
So I think I like to that this kind of positive, proactive approach where we're really articulating, you know, I think we just need something that articulates kind of a positive kind of orientation towards kind of what we're doing and how we're engaged in this collectively, and I think it would be really helpful for us as a community to do that very thing, which is, what is the big problem, and how does Open help? But does it? Like, do we? You know, we're advocates for this, right? But if we can't really fully articulate why this is the best solution, because the faculty member is going to not care. So if you can't make that case for them that Open really is the best solution for them, they're going to go to the best solution. Mm-hmm. They should do, right? Mm-hmm. So we really have to be on our toes, and I think of the thought experiment, like, here's a big goal for us that we kind of agree to, and kind of reverse engineer kind of, you know, through the process and think about how does Open lead us here in the best way. Norm's made a great argument for, you know, the kind of systems he works on, but I think we need to do that more broadly as well.
Yeah, I think it's got to be, if we're on the faculty side, got to be not just, this is something else you're going to do, this is part of who you are as a member of the academe. You should be contributing knowledge back to the field and redefine it as who they are and not as something else they have to do. So coming from somebody who has to deal with the faculty resistance all the time about things, yeah.
There's that.
Okay.
And that kind of closely back to our conversation about communication.
So I found this conversation really, really helpful. Hope everybody has a more solid sense of the bigger picture that we're focusing on. In our deliverables list, there are currently about 10 items that seem to pop out along the longer list. Seem to be some coalescing around. Having that list of 10 items, maybe that's too many. Maybe some of them can be consolidated, but I feel like that's a good step forward, big step forward from where we were before this meeting, articulating that these are the set of things that seem most interesting to us. Can we pop up the deliverables list, the Google Drive?
Highlighted everything.
Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah.
All good. Yeah. So the things that popped out, this declaration of principles with so much to start from and to reference. Mm-hmm. Then using the SDGs as a framework to express this stuff. Very powerful messaging of short statements of what those principles are, backed up by, you know, really powerful data that we have at our fingertips. This state of the best practices and guidelines for universities, building off of and complementing what's been started, for instance, with the Doers Collaborative, our public knowledge requirements as a key principle with some specifics that we might be able to flesh out. A big effort, series of campaigns around communication engagement with a full range of higher ed advocacy groups, messaging, and so forth. Backing that up with an understanding of institutional consortia and what has worked, what we might want to learn from in order to scale some of this up. And competing of knowledge institutions, one of the new responsibilities in fake news post-truth, which some people will be working on regardless. The call is open for people to join. Likewise, case study in the future of open courseware, different sustainability models for open, very important. And last but not least, a proposal to revisit metadata for OER, updating standards, and also the culture of use around these things. To reinvigorate what was a very important effort a number of years ago. So that's a pretty long list.
I think it's an excellent agenda. I mean, who said it? A person's reach should exceed their grasp, or else what are the heavens for? I mean, it's certainly more than we can do, but if all of those things were done, the world would be a different place.
And you can't cross the ocean without losing sight of the shore.
My sense would be that you know, statement of principles ought to be part of that first wave of things that we work on. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't do everything at once, but that ought to set the scene for just about everything else that goes on. Maybe that's our central bit of work for the next quarter, supplemented by continuing to think, you know, as we come across ideas, things to keep fleshing out some of these other items.
I do want to make a case for some of the, not to keep that going, but the list that follows on, in large part because, like that first thing, in part because there's some good news stuff there that's not pitchforky, toothy, wolfy stuff. Like Peter Suber's idea, couldn't join us today, of, you know, actually recording champions of open talking about what the successes of their work has achieved. This is in particular open access, but it's also nice to imagine a video deliverable as well as a number of other written deliverables, I think, for our group. I believe that what we can do is also make sure that the mix of deliverables that we have cross type and media, so there can be like a wiki or a video or a paper or a scan, you know, this kind of stuff. And so I just, you know, if it can exceed the remit of the group, it a lot today. I think of some good news and type things that can help the comms piece of our work moving forward, and having senior faculty members at a variety of institutions or teachers, you know, on camera, I think would be great.
So I've just added videos of champions of open under the bold item in the upper list about communication engagement building a coalition. So we plan to gather again in early 2020. I would propose that by that next session, we have a really solid draft of these statements of principles. And we
set for that meeting?
We're looking at right now, it seems February 12th, 13th on the West Coast, hosted by Angela and Hewlett. Different menu, maybe? Great hospitality. And then the final or the fourth meeting in the whole group would be in around May at Cambridge. But we can circulate that, make sure it works for the majority of people. We didn't want to leave this meeting without having a sense of that next day. As early as this morning, kind of defining that. Is it tough for a lot of people, or is it okay?
I can't make that mistake.
Well, let's see what it looks like. We'll circulate on the list.
So we have a pin on the map anyway. And Kurt, I'm sorry, I interrupted you describing what and how you hope we would collaborate between now and then.
I was describing the what. I had not gotten to the how yet. Yeah. And
I have some visions about the what. So I know we've got that vision statement on the wiki, and it's like a couple of sentences long. I think like it. Before getting, or in addition to getting to principles, it would help me like to craft an argument about like identifying the key threats that like have been already voiced, and you know, Hal spoke to some of them, others have spoken to them, that were like that are top of mind, that are concerns for the work that we are trying to figure out how to address. Where are the opportunities? Where is there momentum in the field that we're noticing and that we want to build upon, and so like these are the principles or the areas that we think have the greatest potential or you know, particular work to be done around these areas. So it's not just the list of principles, but really more of an argument about like how we got to these and why we think that these are important principles.
One thing I feel like I'm hearing around the room is also just a little tension about whether what we're really addressing is just open broadly or
yes. Yes.
And you know, getting back to Cable's encouragement that we sort of pick a lane and stay in it, you know, that may be another piece of this as well, right? So I can see how we can plug into most of the SDGs just by talking about open learning. And, you know, even to some degree, Peter, addressing the truth and trust piece, but around that whole information literacy conversation and civic engagement and open contributing back to helping create learners who are going to, you know, be better consumers and producers of materials and knowledge. You know, I think when we get into, when we lose sight of the learning part of that, it starts to get pretty amorphous pretty quickly. And, you know, that may be something else to tackle. It's just, I think, a different, somewhat different conversation at a higher level than staying focused on the open learning piece or open education, however we want to define it.
For me, like, a piece that talks, like, very clear about, like, this is what we focus on, this is why this, you know, we think it's important to the moment in this piece. So, yeah, I agree. I feel like there is some still working out that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you would like to add to the mix?
So what are the specifics? Will the MIT crew take a swing at a first draft? Do you want to assign some of us to do that? Is it a free-for-all of a Google document? Like, what process would you like to follow?
I think we have to define that process, and we can start to do that right now in the 15 minutes that, you know, however long we have that remain, or we can do it together online. But I think it would be nice to have maybe additional deliverables too, like not just the one statement of principles, but maybe some of the other things. My sense is that February is going to show up pretty soon, and then May will show up just a few months after that. And I think there are multiple deliverables that we should probably be working on.
Can you reiterate the timeline and why you're feeling pressure around May?
Well, we set up this working group to be a one-year initiative with four meetings, and that by the end of the year, we'd have some deliverables and defined directions for additional deliverables. And like that, so I feel the pressure because it's self-imposed.
I hadn't lost sight of that. I wasn't sure everybody else in the room was aware of it. Well, I'll tell you.
Change the name of the group to be the Open 2021. Okay. So that would be a big relief.
Yeah. I'll tell you what has worked well with the doers stuff because, we've, and take it or leave it. Lots of people, lots of opinions, but what we've been doing, and it's been largely, the three systems that sort of started the work, coming away from meetings like this and drafting something, we put together kind of a plan of action, and in some cases, we sort of made some decisions because it just had to be done, but then made sure by feeding it back to the rest of the group that there was consensus around that. I know I would trust you guys to do that. I think as long as we're open to process and we're continuing to share back, that can work. But I think somebody's got to take the bull by the horn and get some things done.
The nice thing about having multiple deliverables, maybe or some momentum behind several deliverables, is that it gives more people a chance to lead certain initiatives. That would be good, and so I think our initial tendency toward five or something, or three or four, would be good to just keep pushing on as a group, and not exciting and ambitious as that first one is, not only have the one, because, you're busy.
That's why I picked just one.
Yeah, but I think that then we might not even have the one. It would be great to have several of them cooking at the same time.
I know for me personally, I'd be very interested in working on, the Declaration of Principles and also, Angela, the thing you're talking about, which is really just kind of distilling the conversations we've been having over the first couple of years. Those are both very interesting, but, there's so much, deeper experience and expertise around the room, I would not want to do that by myself.
Yeah. And also, before we become, again, paralyzed by the idea of there being too much work, let's think of whether there are people outside, like in that list that goes down here, a white paper from Sarah Kember, who's a goldsmith on open and the neoliberal funding agenda. This is actually at the core of her work. And so it's conceivable that we could find someone to write a draft paper or extend a landscape analysis or something with some funding that we could maybe devote toward commissioning that work. And so it wouldn't be entirely upon us, although it would be upon us to design the project, raise the support, and vet them. I think, if we look internally, all of the gasoline behind the project is coming from our, I don't know what the right metaphor, it's a long couple of days. But there are a lot of smarter people outside of this room than in it, and just quantitatively, not qualitative. But we might be able to rely on some of their expertise and energy to commission work that fits in with the deliverables that we believe in, including people who are close to us, but who are just not here right now.
So are some good early milestones, like we, you give you a couple of weeks to organize the notes. We send them around to the group and or put them on the wiki. And then sometimes we now, and I've seen a lot of us in the next openness to have, like, just, especially the part about the big goals, like, to make sure we've all sort of annotated that section to make sure that the ones that we've discussed in our little group, to the extent that we come part of the activity, are actually reflections of what we hope they would say. And then maybe try either virtual or like a coffee touch base sometime around the end of October or November.
Yeah. Good idea.
I mean, this is also, of course, dependent on whether the notes can be turned around in a couple of weeks. So I don't want to impose the deadline on someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends
what you're looking for in terms of notes, because I've basically been taking like transcripts of these discussions because they're wide ranging and hard to summarize.
Plus a nudge or two.
Yeah. And we also have this.
That I can give you like tomorrow.
Nudges would be.
It might be helpful at this first crack if you guys could do some of that synthesis.
Yeah.
You got it.
Again, what we did with Stewart's, you know, the conversation was all over the map, but then I sat down with Steve Chinoy, who's been the consultant on that work, and we just sort of boiled it down into something that felt a little more actionable and did sort of that qualitative analysis of the themes that emerged from the discussion, which we started to do.
And a lot of today's discussion is captured in the Google Docs, so I didn't try to.
We'll do it, but I think there might be people who are super energetic in this room who want to work with us on that. My sense is that Cable, I don't know if you're out there.
I look super energetic.
Yeah, I'm just picking, you are super energetic, and I'm just picking up on the dynamism that you brought to this meeting. You weren't at the last one. It would be wonderful if you were open to working with us on some of this stuff in some systematic way that suits your schedule.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in the list of whatever pocket pillars or best practices. Yeah, that long list of them.
Are you wanting to flesh out all of the different bold?
So you bolded several of these, right?
Yeah.
Do you want? So one way we could go about this is people in this room could sign up for different bold statements and work to flesh those out a little bit.
I think that would be great. I mean, we began that process here. I sense how you and I, my sense is reified a little bit by the note you just slipped me that said explicitly this, but like we could work on one of these things
right.
together too. Yeah. And you, so there's a lot of energy in this room, but there may be a subdued feeling right now because the list is long and it's been a couple of days that have been intense, but maybe there's some way to flesh those things out. And then, in other words, I don't want us to walk away feeling like it's on us to do everything next, and I also don't want to walk away from this group feeling like the process is not fundamentally collaborative, so that no one needs to wait on us to do this.
There are the general principles that the entire group would likely want to have input into, and which also probably needs the initial distillation of the conversation. And in addition, there are the bolded sub-items around which some people might feel more inclined to dig in. So we can do, you know, we can head down both of those paths. But again, going back to sharing the cable, we need to agree that these are the steps, right? So we're not just sitting.
Yeah, sounds like a very good process.
So I will say right now the topic that Angela and Richard and I crafted, I will definitely want to flesh that out, and I'll take responsibility to nudge our group and keep fleshing that out with the group. So sign me up for that.
Deadline that Sharon was mentioning, and the the end of October.
I'll volunteer to take a first swing at the principles to look at all the other documents and pull out good ideas. And I took notes of the conversation as well. I'll take a swing at it. But as you said, everybody should look at those and revise them and make it better.
You're very familiar with a lot of the other large strategy documents that have been produced over the years, and you've had a hand in crafting many of those.
Yeah, a lot of people around the table. But I'll take a first swing at that. And if anybody else wants to co-partner with me, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Can I say one question before we wrap up? You know, the organizers of this meeting were very kind to give me an opportunity at the beginning of the meeting to help get it off to a start. I worried that I perhaps was a bit too somber. But it gave me a chance to express my fears about a cliff that I worry that we're heading off of. And I just wanted everybody to know before we leave that I leave this meeting really encouraged that we may have a fighting chance, not only because of the work in this room, but the work that you're all connected to and the other people who you intend to pull into our circle. And so... I came here desperately worried about the future of this movement, and I will leave here feeling like we may have a fighting chance. So thank you all for that.
No, I agree with Tom. I think this is a good first step. Happy Sweet New Year.
Is anybody heading to BWI? Going to grab an Uber? Anybody heading that direction?
I believe Mark
is.
I'm
going to
go
a little
later.
Yeah. There's a great coffee shop there. The OE Global Annual Conference. Thank you.
Not lunch, but snack on your way.
Yeah.
Not near there. I mean, it's close to here.